From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Maryland's oyster sanctuaries could shrink by 11% if a draft plan from state natural resource officials goes into effect. The Bay's oyster population already is a tiny fraction of what it once was. What would these changes mean? Tim Wheeler of the Bay Journal joins us to talk about what's at stake for the Bay's famous bivalves, as well as for the watermen who depend on them.
Environmentalists believe that oysters are ecologically valuable and that that should take a precedence to restore the health of the Bay. The watermen have complained that some of their best areas for harvest were taken from them to create these sanctuaries.
Plus, we discuss an effort in Annapolis to reduce penalties for poaching oysters. It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Today we're going to talk about one of the pearls of the Chesapeake, the oyster. The Bay once teemed with oysters, but their very abundance made them a target for aggressive harvesting. Habitat was eroded, and more recently, disease added to the devastation of the bivalve population. It's estimated just 1% of the past bounty remains. In 2010, Governor Martin O'Malley expanded the state's oyster sanctuaries in an effort to bulk up the numbers. Now, state natural resources officials have drafted a plan that would shrink those sanctuaries by 11%. And there's an effort in Annapolis to reduce the penalty for poaching oysters from restricted areas. What lies ahead for Maryland's oysters? Timothy Wheeler, managing editor and reporter for the Bay Journal, is with me in studio. Welcome back to On the Record.
Thanks, Sheila. Glad to be here.
So, Tim, tell us in broad strokes what this draft plan from the state's Department of Natural Resources would do.
Well, I suppose the department would want me to first specify that this is just a talking point draft. It's a start. Their Oyster Advisory Commission has been meeting since last summer to give them advice on what to do about the state's management of oysters. And one of the prime topics are these sanctuaries, the expanded sanctuaries. The watermen would like to access more of them because they believe that they need the area to harvest. The draft plan represents sort of a compilation from the department of proposals from watermen about opening sanctuaries, as well as some proposals from environmental groups about protecting some other areas. In broad strokes, it would open some sanctuaries, about seven of them. It would also create three new ones and expand four existing ones. The net effect of this push and pull is that there would be a net reduction of about 11% in the area of sanctuaries where oysters grow.
Right now, the sanctuaries amount to what? About one-fourth of the total oystering areas of the Bay?
24%. Nearly a fourth.
And can you take us inside the thinking on each side about this push and pull you describe? Why cut back some sanctuaries while you're creating others and expanding some?
Well, the department had characterized this at the Oyster Advisory Commission meeting earlier this month as a fair and balanced plan. They were trying to draw from both sides. This is, as you can imagine, a pretty divisive issue. Environmentalists believe that oysters are ecologically valuable and that that should take a precedence to restore the health of the Bay. They don't want to see any of the sanctuaries reduced. The watermen have complained since the expansion that some of their best areas for harvest were taken from them to create these sanctuaries.
So is the thinking behind this talking point proposal then to let watermen have access to harvesting in some of the best areas?
Well, it would open up some of the best areas. Again, it would open portions of, as I said, seven sanctuaries. In almost all of those, it's a limited opening in the sense that they will be allowed to try a new management technique, a new harvest technique called rotational harvest.
What is rotational harvest?
In essence, it's where they're allowed to harvest the oysters every, in this case, 4 years. That would give time for oysters to grow. It usually takes them about 3 years to grow from baby spat, where they just settle on the bottom, to 3-inch sized oysters. So 4 years is an extra year to guarantee that they're big enough, and the waterman would have to put down some shell and sort of do some things to maintain the sanctuary. So this is a technique that has been pioneered in Virginia with good reviews down there for how it's worked. It's enabled them to sort of spread out the harvest so there's not too much taken at once.
Rotational harvesting sounds like it might be hard to enforce. I mean, how do you keep track of whether watermen are actually waiting the extra year to harvest?
When they set up the rotational harvest areas, and there'll be one set up in an open public fishery area now, there are a couple experimental ones, they divide the area up into zones so that you can harvest in one zone at a time in a given year. So the natural resources police presumably could check and see where the boats are and make sure that they're in the right area. These would be marked with buoys. They'd be identified on maps so that the watermen presumably should know where they're supposed to be in a given year.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Bay Journal managing editor and reporter Tim Wheeler. We're talking about potential changes in oyster policy in Maryland. What is the order of events now that this DNR talking points plan has been released? What happens next?
This commission that was created, a newly created commission, there had been an old one. It was allowed to sort of go out of existence, and a new one was appointed. A few holdovers from the old commission, mostly new members. It's at least evenly balanced with probably a majority of industry supporters or members on it. They meet roughly once a month, and they will be expected to come back and talk over this proposal. There are issues that both sides have with it. I think the watermen were not entirely satisfied with the proposals that the department made.
Because they don't think it opens enough of the sanctuaries?
Enough or in some of the right areas. And on the other side, some of the environmental groups were not happy at all that there would be any decline in the sanctuaries. It goes from a roughly 24% of the viable oyster habitat to 21% in sanctuaries. You know, it's an 11% decline in terms of the overall share. It's down from 24 to 21. So it's a shrinkage.
How much has the public invested? How much has the state invested in these sanctuaries?
In a handful of them, it's invested quite a lot. There are three rivers, tributaries of the bay on the eastern shore, parts of the greater Choptank River complex, Harris Creek, Little Choptank River, Trout-Avon River, where the federal government and the state government have invested millions, literally millions. It's on the order of $40 million or so total that would be invested. I don't know that it's all been spent so far. To create new reefs, to expand existing ones, and then to seed them with oysters that were spawned in a state-run hatchery at University of Maryland on Horn Point. The problem in Maryland's part of the bay is that the oysters don't reproduce naturally, regularly, and reliably, so they need to be supplemented in order to grow the population with hatchery oysters. Many of the state's sanctuaries, there are 51 in all, have had no significant public investment. They have simply been allowed to stay free of harvest pressure. And some of them are doing very well, some of them are doing okay, some of them not doing so well.
Is there an argument that there should be a different policy for sanctuaries in which the government has invested compared to ones that were just relieved from the pressure of harvesting?
Yes, and the state's plan leaves out those where there's been any federal investment because the federal government money was spent with the understanding that they would be permanent sanctuaries. So there's no proposal to touch any of those three rivers. Maryland has committed through the Bay Restoration Agreement to actually restore oysters in five rivers, so they still have to pick two more. And that's part of what this commission is being tasked to do, and that's a chore that they're going to struggle with because there's quite a bit of debate about where those should be and, you know, how they should be chosen. But for the time being, at least, the only openings here are of those state sanctuaries where little or no investment has been made in terms of increasing habitat or planting oysters.
What do we know in terms of whether the sanctuaries have done what they were supposed to do in terms of building up the oyster population?
The department did a review after 5 years. It's been a little over 5 years now since these sanctuaries were created. They were created in 2010. So last summer, the Department of Natural Resources published a report in which they compiled all their information about how oysters were doing in the bay, including the sanctuaries. And what they found was that there were some sanctuaries, as I said, that were not doing so well. Some are doing better. Some are doing quite well. The overall net effect of that was, though, that the oysters, the biomass, the total volume, the size of the oysters plus the number of them, not simply just their population but their size, was greater in the sanctuaries than it was in the areas that were open to public harvest. You might understand the reason why that might be is because the watermen come through and they pluck out all the biggest oysters every year. So what's left are smaller ones. The fact is that the oysters were surviving overall in the sanctuaries, and they're growing larger. The larger they grow and the older they get, the more juveniles, the more larvae they produce. Whether they're producing enough to sustain themselves, that's going to take more time to tell. But the first blush from this state review is that they seem to be doing okay. In fact, maybe doing a little better than the public harvest areas. As you may remember, there is great concern about whether the harvest pressure we have right now is sustainable for the population we have. The legislature last year tasked the department with doing a stock assessment to tell us the answer to that, and that will not come until next year, the end of 2018.
There are a lot more licenses that have been granted to harvest oysters, right?
Yes, there are. The year that the sanctuaries were expanded in 2010, there was one of those years when we had a bumper crop of baby oysters from natural reproduction. They don't happen as often here as they do in Virginia, where the water is saltier. Oysters tend to reproduce better in salty water. But in 2010, there was a bumper crop, and then there was another good crop of reproduction in 2012. So 2 years close together produced a lot of new oysters in our end of the bay. Watermen heard about that. They're out on the water. They recognize it. They saw it. And the number of watermen on our end of the bay, anyway, nearly doubled in that time. From around 2007, it was 570 licenses or authorizations to harvest oysters to 1,100 last year. And there has been no good reproduction since. It's been middling to poor.
Is the increase in the number of watermen seeking to harvest oysters part of what's led to this proposal before the Department of Natural Resources?
Well, it certainly added to the pressure, because the harvest in the last couple of years, since there's been no good natural reproduction, remember I said that it takes about 3 years for oysters to grow to harvestable size. Since there's been no more good reproduction since 2012, the number of new oysters coming to harvestable size has started to decline. And in truth, the last 2 years, Maryland's oyster harvest has begun to slip again. It peaked about 3 years ago at 400,000 bushels. It slipped below 400,000 last year. It's expected to be significantly below 400,000 this year. The other factor that's coming into play is that we've had some fairly dry weather. Dry weather helps reproduction because it makes the water saltier. There's less rainfall coming in. But that also encourages and worsens diseases that afflict oysters. Two diseases called MSX and Dermo. Parasites, they're in the bay all the time. They're in many oysters. They're not harmful to people, but they can kill the oysters if they get virulent enough. And as the water becomes saltier, that encourages their virulence. And so there's been an uptick in disease killing oysters in the bay.
So that's a smaller harvest shared among more oystermen.
Right. Now, you know, we won't know until the end of the season probably how many of them actually went out or stuck with it throughout the season. You know, there's probably some of them who gave up because they couldn't find enough. But the fact is that there were more licensed harvesters up through last year, from 570 to more than 1,100. And there are more than that many still who could actually get out on the water at any given time and go after oysters, too, if there were more to get. It's a little bit self-regulating. You don't go out there if you can't catch enough oysters to pay for your gas and make it worth your while. But, yes, the pressure to get into the sanctuaries, it's my opinion only, is heightened by the fact that there are fewer oysters for them to catch because there are too many of them out there still for the available ones that are in the public fishery.
So who will make the decision about opening some of the sanctuaries, and what's the timeline?
Well, the department could do it by regulation, and that's the process they're working through now. They're asking this commission to give them a recommendation, and then the department will make a decision based on that recommendation. There is a bill that was introduced in the General Assembly this session that would prohibit the department from opening sanctuaries for the time being, at least until stock assessment is finished. It doesn't have a lot of co-sponsors, so I don't give it a whole lot of prospect for passage, but the session is only about halfway done.
That's Tim Wheeler, managing editor and reporter for the Bay Journal. We're talking about potential policy changes for Maryland's oysters. We need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll hear more about the future of the Bay's oyster sanctuaries. And we'll talk about poaching oysters, not cooking them, illegally harvesting them. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the Chesapeake Bay's oyster population and a few policy changes under discussion in Maryland. My guest is Timothy Wheeler of the Bay Journal. Tim, in last year's General Assembly session, as well as the current one, we've seen efforts to reduce the penalties for poaching oysters. What are the current penalties?
Well, they vary. Poaching is sort of a broad term for any oystering violation. In the last several years, since around 2010 or 2012, the penalties were stiffened. There was a belief that there was just too much poaching going on, that the penalties weren't severe enough, that there wasn't strict enforcement. At the same time that the sanctuaries were enlarged around 2010, and there was an effort in the O'Malley administration to enhance aquaculture, especially the oyster farmers complained that their oysters were taken when they weren't out there at night to watch them or at other times. The penalties were stiffened to the point that you could lose your license to work on the water permanently for severe enough violation, and sometimes for just a single violation. If you were caught poaching oysters from one of the sanctuaries, one of the state-designated sanctuaries, you could lose your license forever.
How big a problem is poaching in terms of the oyster population? Of all the problems that we've been discussing, is poaching a big factor?
It's hard to say for sure. There's a belief that it was significant, and that there was a need to really crack down. There are a lot of violations that are handed out to watermen for all kinds of regulations. Just like any other business out there, there are multiple regulations that they have to comply with. And so they get cited a lot. Poaching has been a problem. There have been a couple of dozen watermen who have lost their licenses permanently as a result of this, who were caught. And there's a belief that among the watermen especially, that the rules are too tight, that it's possible that they make mistakes. Sometimes you wander into one of these sanctuaries without knowing it's there. The marker is moved. These are some of the sort of explanations or excuses, depending on your perspective, that have given. And that,
well, what do you hear from watermen? Do they say they basically have to poach to make ends meet?
A few have said that. When things get real scarce at the end of a season, sometimes maybe they are driven to do this. Or when the weather's bad and they don't want to go too far away from home, or when they have bills to pay. So, yes, there have been those kinds of economic pressures. It's always been sort of a, you know, a wink and a nod where, you know, you may not throw back all the small undersized oysters you have. That's another penalty you can get for having too many undersized oysters in your bushel. But the poaching in the sanctuaries, that was one thing that was made hard and fast. One and done. The watermen have resented the expansion of the sanctuaries. That's been sort of a grating problem with them. And there have been proposals to ease that absolute penalty that they could get.
So what are the proposals in Annapolis?
There were two bills put in this year. Let's talk about the one that's still alive. There were two put in. One is effectively dead already because the committee gave it an unfavorable recommendation.
Okay, let's move past that one.
All right.
What is still being discussed?
The one that is still pending is one that would basically change from the department shall revoke a license to the department may revoke a license. And that's strictly that one, to give the department discretion to decide whether the infraction was severe enough that it warrants losing your license for good.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Bay Journal managing editor and reporter Tim Wheeler. We're talking about potential changes in oyster policy in Maryland. So the proposal would give more discretion about whether or not to permanently revoke?
Mm-hmm.
Would it lay out guidelines for when that discretion should be exercised?
It basically just change the shall to may or authorize the department instead of requiring the department. So it did not draw a distinction about when revocation was required.
Has this proposal been before the legislature before?
There have been complaints and efforts to try to soften the penalties in past. They generally tend to get voted down. There was enough of a belief that poaching was enough of a problem that the legislature has balked at weakening the penalties.
Where is Governor Hogan's administration on this?
That's a good question. This bill, as of this point, has not come up for a hearing. There's been no testimony given on it. The department has been a little bit coy about its position on non-departmental bills. They have not testified or even provided written comment on a number of bills.
And this proposal to put some flexibility into the penalties for poaching, this is not a proposal from the administration?
No. The prime sponsor is a delegate from the Eastern Shore.
You wrote a piece for the Baltimore Sun before you left about poachers losing their licenses in Maryland only to move their operations to Virginia. Is Virginia more lenient than Maryland?
Not much, no. The folks who did that wound up getting cited and charged by the Virginia ultimately after we brought it to their attention. Poaching has been a problem down there as well. So they have tightened up. It may not be quite as severe as Maryland, but it's tighter, and people there can lose their license too, I think, for repeat violations.
You say the legislature has not tended to back this kind of thing. Is there any other proposal that watermen are seeking?
You know, they're asking for other kinds of changes to fishing regulations, but in terms of oysters, there were these two bills, this one that would give the department discretion, another proposal that had come in, and this is the one that was already killed effectively, would have reduced the penalty for using the wrong kind of gear. There are different ways one harvests oysters in the bay. The old-fashioned way is with hand tongs, a pair of scissors-like rakes that you work the bottom. As you can imagine, that's very labor-intensive, and you tend to take a smaller number of oysters at a time. There are divers, guys who go underwater with breathing apparatus and pluck oysters off of the bottom. And there are sails, the old-fashioned skipjacks, really just a handful of them still work the bay, usually under power, not often under sail because it's, again, not very efficient. The most efficient ways to take oysters are with the mechanical dredge. That's become increasingly popular for obvious reasons. It's not backbreaking, and you can actually cover a lot more territory faster and make a pretty good living with fewer oysters out there because you can cover a lot of ground to pluck them up if they're scattered.
Don't some watermen argue that actually helps the harvest by getting the oysters out of the muck in the bottom?
They do. There's no real evidence that that's true because typically they work the oyster reefs up through March. Oysters tend to spawn in June or July, and by that time, there's no real evidence that they've done really any good. If they did it right before the oyster spat reproduction season, it might work, but the studies that have looked at it have not found any noticeable difference.
How high a priority is the relaxation of the poaching penalties to the watermen?
I would think they would, you know, this would be something that they would support. You know, the challenge will be for them to convince the rest of the assembly that it's something that they should support, because I think others who aren't representing watermen on the bay tend to feel, you know, that all the oysters out there are the public's resource and that they should be protected and that people should follow the rules.
Thanks for walking us through it.
Sure.
Tim Wheeler is managing editor of the Bay Journal and a former Baltimore Sun reporter. He's written extensively about oyster policy in the bay. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Kass. So glad you've been with us today. Tune in again tomorrow.